This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Watley on KLZ 560.
Good afternoon and welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's the Legal Hour with our good friend Kevin Flesh. We will open up the phone lines if you've got any kind of legal question. We will take your calls, 303-477-5600. And with that, we will welcome Mr. Flesh. How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you, Scott?
I'm good, man. It's hard to believe. It's going to be Christmas and Thanksgiving.
Oh, my gosh. It's coming so fast. The leaves are just starting to change, but yeah. They're going to be down on the ground here quick, too.
I know. So, anyway, man, it's been a fast year for us here with our Legal Hour. But we welcome your calls. So, again, if you've got any kind of legal question, we will take your calls. You can check out Kevin's website at fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, lawfirm.com. And Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886. We're going to kind of cover some different things today and talk a little bit about different types of cases, different categories for them. Definitely want to touch on this Kavanaugh hearing. And
yeah, I think I think we should talk about it because there's so much going on, and it's really interesting the dynamics of what are going on and what people believe and don't believe. And I think it's helpful for folks to understand sort of in the legal arena how this all works, because it's not a legal process, right? The Kavanaugh hearings are legal in the sense that people have to tell the truth, mm-hmm. penalty of perjury, not really perjury, but the penalty of felony in Senate right. hearings. And that means that if you lie to the Senate, you could be charged with a felony. And that's going to be interesting to see if there's anything that comes of both the accuser's testimony, the doctor's testimony, and Kavanaugh's testimony. I don't think the FBI report evidently came out this morning, and people yeah. are going through it and making comments about it.
And I heard there's one copy.
Yes.
That is what I heard. And then they have to take different shifts, so
that's
to speak, to
like.
Coming in looking at it. I right. guess that's one way to keep it from leaking.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, there's been so many leaks about this, right, that this whole process and just our government in general seems to be leaking like crazy. Mm. So that's one way of doing it, although I hope that they disclose it at some point. I mean, I would like to find out more information about it. And I forget what I was listening to on the way in here, but they were also talking about how the questioning of the accuser was interesting in that now it looks like all the questioning was just related to things that potentially the Republicans knew about to see if she was telling the truth and whether they can prosecute her later for lying to the Senate. And so that will be interesting to right. see if anything actually comes of that. And I'm, you know, there's just always a lot of strategy on both sides politically about these things. And that's really what we're seeing is a political process. And so it's not exactly what I do in a jury trial or anything mm-hmm. else. But it is interesting because I had a case a month ago in which a sex offense, it was a consent case, similar to what's going on with Mr. Kavanaugh and his accuser, in the sense that she's saying that they had some sort of sexual relations, as President Bill Clinton would say years and years ago, and that she didn't consent to it. And you get two people in a room together, and that's what it kind of sounds like has mm-hmm. at least theoretically happened in this case, if you believe the doctor. And at any rate, and where people fall on, you know, the Me Too movement and all the things that we've been talking about for the last several years relating to certainly credible things that have happened to women and being abused. Right. And there's no question about that. And whether or not this is one of those situations or whether or not she's making it up for political purposes. And so it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. And what people in this debate believe is enough proof. Right. And that's really, you know, you and I as sitting here in a radio studio talking about it, two men, you know, what are two women thinking about the same evidence that's presented? So sure. I think it's really interesting in the sense that in trials, that's what the majority of the evidence is people giving their opinion about what they remember happening and what they saw right. and testifying to either 6 or 12 people. And then those 6 or 12 people have to make their own decisions about what they believe. And that's really what it comes down to.
And when you get this many whether it's in their own mind or not, their legal minds in a room and all them approaching it from different ways and all the different things. I mean, man, it's a mess.
Well, and what is also interesting is you begin to realize what you have for your own biases and how you approach things. What I think as a student of sort of the legal process and of jury trials is watching how people react to this particular testimony from both of these witnesses, because that's essentially what they were last week.
Sure.
And I was lucky enough, I had a court appearance on the Western Slope last Thursday morning, and so I was driving back from Grand Junction when Kavanaugh testified, and I didn't see any of the testimony, but I could gather from hearing it on the radio what it was like, and it was pretty dramatic and pretty compelling. But leading up to that, I was also listening to all of the pundits, and I was listening to both Republican and Democrat, I mean, on the radio sphere, sure. So you get a sense. And it was fun because even the Republicans, I think, after Dr. Ford testified, thought she was a pretty good witness, that she was pretty compelling as well. And so that's the interesting thing as to where people fall. They listen, for example, the Democrats that are obviously not wanting Kavanaugh to be approved to be on the Supreme Court, want to find anything they can so that their fellow Republicans don't vote for him, so that the advise and consent doesn't happen. At the same time, the Republicans have in several jurisdictions are concerned about either they've got an election coming up, or they're sort of a purple place anyway, and so they've got to be careful a little bit about what they do. And so we've got three or four or five senators that are in play, and those are the people that are now everybody is trying to compel to go their way or the other. And so it is very much like a jury trial in that respect, is that they've got to decide on what for the Republicans in particular, you know, if they believe that there hasn't been enough evidence, then is there enough political cover for them to be made from this FBI report to say, listen, there really wasn't anything going on here. And they can't even prove if she was in the same room with them, let alone something else happened.
Because, I mean, there are a ton of holes. Oh. In her deal.
Yes.
I mean, in her testimony.
Right.
And where,
I
mean, she doesn't remember how she got there, doesn't remember how she got home. There's
a lot.
Yeah.
At the same time, if you're not a person that comes to this party with a logical way of looking at this, and you make your decisions in an emotional context, she was very believable to the person that's emotional.
Sure.
She is, and a person that's empathetic to her, you throw the facts out to some degree. And that's, I deal with that in reality on quite a bit. And that's some of the things that we talk about in deciding on who to be a juror or not in some cases, is whether do we want an emotional juror, or do we want someone that did exactly what you said, okay, this is her story. Now, why doesn't she know who she came with to the party? Why doesn't she know where the party is? Why doesn't she know the specific time period? All of those things. And of course, there are some people out there that are involved in this sort of these allegations and the process in the jury system would say, well, that's not unusual. People who are victims of this sort of thing remember the event fairly well, but they've then taken out all of the other details. Mm-hmm. And it's been 36 years, right? But at the same time, you have to come back to, and these are the things we do in trials. Mm-hmm. It didn't really happen at the hearings, but why didn't you ever make a complaint to one of your parents immediately, or to one of your friends, or to law enforcement? Anything.
Yeah.
For, I think the first time she says she mentioned it to anyone was in this therapist, and that was 2012. So that was still
quite a while later.
30 years.
Right.
So you do have to pause a little bit. At least I would. And if you're skeptical about these things in general, then you have to wonder. If you're not, if you're sort of in the camp of you believe every person that comes forward in the Me Too sort of movement, and that women have been so oppressed because of what's happened in their lives over the millennial, that this is really the ability for them to start gaining some of their power back relating to this aspect of their life, they're going to believe it.
Sure.
No matter what she says. I mean, should they believe the allegation, and then the person that's being accused has to disprove it. But that's not how our system works, right? In jury trials, that's not how it works. But in some people's minds, that's the way they want it right. to be.
Because you wonder, like, you know, is it their job to prove what she's saying is true, or his job to prove, you know, his innocence? And I mean, is the burden more on?
Well, and this as the Democrats will say, this is a job interview. That's all it is, right? Well, we all know it's more than a job interview, because they wouldn't be so excited about his nomination, because his beliefs, and even though he doesn't really want to talk about them in the hearings, you can look at his 300 plus opinions that he's had to make decisions about as a judge now, and you get a sense of this is a conservative guy. I mean, he's a literalist. We talk about it in other weeks. I read the Constitution literally. I think the words have a specific meaning. And if you want to change those meanings and you want to change the Constitution, there's a process to do that. Mm-hmm. But in my opinion, as a lawyer and as a person in this country, it's not the job of a judge to change the meaning of a word to fit what they want it to say, right? And that's what a lot of times the Democrats do with the individuals who they believe are on the court for their purposes. Is it's not legislatively changed. It's changed because judges change the interpretation of what is written. Mm-hmm. And that, and for their purposes, really, the reason that they like that is because the legislative process is hard. That getting folks in this country to change their opinions about certain things and to pass a law to show that change takes a lot of work. It's much easier to compel one individual or a group of four or five individuals on the court to make that change, right?
Right.
And if they can get those people on the highest court in the land, guess what? They get the last say, and then they get the power relating to that. Sure. And so that's really why this fight is going on. It's not because he drank a lot in high school or college.
Right. Right.
It's just not.
Exactly. And it was they say hard tell on the radio, but if you're watching on TV, I mean, when he sat down, I mean, he came out swinging, so to speak. I mean,
he did.
He was mad, you know. And I get that as a guy or a lady, if you're accused of something and you believe you're innocent, I get that. But as an attorney, if he was your client, would you have coached him in any different, or was that good to come across that strong and that?
Yeah. Human? So when I first heard this on the radio, I thought he really came across strong and compelling. I would have, and remember the background. This isn't just some guy that comes off the street. He's currently a federal judge, mm-hmm. which a federal judge has a lifetime appointment already. So when the Democrats are like, you know, this is a job interview for a lifetime appointment, he already has that. I mean, he's not going to, just because he's not confirmed in this hearing, I doubt that he's going to lose his appointment in the bench that he's on now.
Sure.
So I was thinking about that in regards to his responses. The beginning part in his statement where he said he wrote it and he did it, it was clear to me in listening to him that those were his words and that's how he felt. And I think he got very little coaching relating to that. And I thought he did a really good job in being compelling. Mm-hmm. And I'm a Republican, right? So obviously I drink the Kool-Aid. So I was like, all right, that's great. Where I thought he got a little snarky and I thought that he was a little off point was when he started challenging the senators about their drinking maybe a little bit.
Yeah, he asked the one lady if she's black. And then he apologized when he came back. But
and I think
you can't bring back words.
He rang that bell.
Yeah.
So, but there were times where I would have liked him, and I'm sure I would have assumed his handlers said, listen, if there's a question that doesn't really affect the outcome here that you can agree with them on, because I tell witnesses this, you don't have to fight about everything when you're mm-hmm. testifying, and you don't have to fight about everything to get your message across. And in fact, there are times where you can agree and you can concede points that maybe aren't exactly the way you want it to be, but that you concede it because you look like a reasonable person.
Right.
And he didn't do that. You know, he went back to his sort of talking points on a pretty regular basis. I don't remember. I mean, like, they were talking about, and maybe it was his drinking, or maybe it was some of the partying that was going on, you know, in 82 or 83 and what was going on. Oh, and I think it was maybe relating to his yearbook. There were questions that he kind of went off on a completely different tangent with stuff.
And that's never good.
No, yeah. It's not. Why go? Because remember, there were times where he said, well, can I, I was over at this guy's house. Can I give you that person's name? And maybe they thought this FBI thing may happen, and so they'd give him some more corroborating evidence so that the FBI would go out and talk to these individuals. But it sounded like those reports the senators already had, that they already had those names, and then in some points he was sort of giving names, and some points he wasn't. And it just seemed odd to me why you just, like what I tell clients about in criminal cases, listen to the question. Answer the question and nothing else. Don't give any information. There's no reason to do that, and it just causes you potentially to go somewhere else that you didn't need to go. And he did a little bit of that, and I was a little bit of surprised by that. And then I was a little bit surprised just by his attitude through the process. I'm in front of federal judges on a regular basis. He was a little more emotional than I was expecting mm-hmm. a federal judge to be.
Yeah.
But that doesn't necessarily mean it's bad, and I mm-hmm. certainly understand, because he is sort of feeling like he's fighting for his life.
Well, sure.
And all of these, I was expecting another round of allegations to come out this week while we were waiting for investigation.
I thought
they had probably another three or four people teed up to say other things, mm-hmm. but we haven't seen that. So
right.
that was a surprise to me this week, because I assumed that was what was going to happen.
Right.
So it's an interesting process.
Absolutely. Again, our number is 303-477-5600. If you got any kind of legal question, it is a Legal Hour with Kevin Flesch. This is Haystack Help Radio.
Without changing your budget, own your home faster. Take AIM, 720-895-0500. Many of our clients have learned to pay less interest to the bank, not change their spending habits, and own their home faster. Affordable Interest Mortgage has a possible solution. 720-895-0500. Does your current loan allow you to access your equity without refinancing for another loan at higher rates? Does your current loan allow your equity to make your mortgage payment without late fees or dinging your credit? At AIM, we have a loan that allows you those freedoms, all for 30 years. This could be the last loan you need. Pay off your home faster, pay less interest to the bank, access your equity when you need it, skip payments. Call AIM for details, 720-895-0500. If you're tired of paying all that interest up front on a traditional 30-year fixed, call 720-895-0500 and let us save you thousands. Home of the Asset Manager, locally owned and operated, where it is all about you. 720-895-0500. Regulated by DOR, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
Let me tell you about one of my favorite stores, The Outdoorsman's Attic, a consignment store for all of your adventure outdoor gear. Hunting, fishing, camping, kayaks, live bait, survival gear, backpacks, sleeping bags, firearms, and ammo. Save 20, 30, 40, and even 50% on new and pre-owned items at The Outdoorsman's Attic. Mention Sportsman of Colorado and save up to 20% on your purchase. This offer excludes firearms and ammo. Never pay retail again. Big savings and friendly service is what you'll find at The Outdoorsman's Attic. Located at 2650 West Hampton Avenue in Sheridan. 303-781-3626. That's 303-781-3626. Check them out, outdoorsmansattic.com.
What could you do with an extra $500, $1,000, or even $1,500 per month? How would that change things for you? Would you buy a new car, pay off bills, or just feel a bit more secure about your retirement? What if I told you there's a way to make your dreams a reality? I'm talking about trading and investing in the market. Now, before you say, oh, that's not for me, just hear me out. I want to invite you to a half-day trading course so you can check this out. I promise you, you'll go away smarter than when you came in. We here at Online Trading Academy sponsor this, and we'll even send you home with a free home study video guide. Your money's doing nothing for you in a CD or mutual fund. Learn how to profit when the market's up or down. Call us now while seats are still available at 303-325-2776. Use offer code RADIO50. 303-325-2776. That's 303-325-2776.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to the Legal Hour here on Haystack Help Radio. My name is Scott Watley, along with Kevin Flesch. Once again, Kevin's number, 303-806-8886. Talking just a little bit about the Kavanaugh hearings, all that's going on. So real quick, then we'll get on some other things. Opening up this investigation for a week, and then they had a very limited scope on it. I mean, you know, nothing's going to...
Well,
come out? I mean, were they going to be happy with that investigation? I mean, the Dems especially.
Yeah, I didn't know, because the other thing that we think about is the ranking members of the intelligence community that's been against Trump and all of the things that have gone on there with the Russia investigation, everything else. I was, quite frankly, when Flake came out and said that let's give it another week and have the FBI do some stuff, the FBI, as we now, I think everybody's learned, and I knew before this, but, you know, they've got folks in every major city in the U.S., and so this investigation isn't hard for them to complete in a week, to interview 10 or 20 witnesses.
Because somebody could be in your office in a half hour.
Right. I mean, I've had it where I've had cases where the FBI calls me and says, we want to meet your guy tomorrow afternoon and come over to the Federal Center in Lakewood, and we're there doing an interview. I mean, it can happen instantaneously, or they show up at your office, you know. I mean, it's amazing what resources they have. So it didn't surprise me that, because this, when you get to the bottom of it, there weren't a lot that they would have to do. I mean, certainly the Democrats want them to spend time with Dr. Ford, but she spent 3 hours. And we know what she knows at this point. So there was really no reason to have another FBI agent go and talk to her, because they had all of the details they really needed. They needed additional corroborating evidence that theoretically she had already given the Senate. So to go out and talk to those folks and talk to Mr. I think it's Judd and a variety of the other people that she said were in the room at the time to corroborate whether or not it happened and all of those sorts of things. So that wasn't my concern. But what my concern was, though, is whether or not the FBI was sort of potentially involved with the Democrats. That would the Democrats somehow have handpicked FBI agents do this investigation so something else would occur? Because you just don't know what their bias is necessarily. And I would say that mainline FBI folks that I've dealt with are always kind of straight up. You know, there's no political game that's played, although I've never had a political figure like this that I've represented. So, so you knew that the Democrats, no matter what, were not going to be satisfied with the results unless the FBI report came back and said, not only did he do this to Dr. Ford, but through our investigation in 1 week, we found 4 other people that he's done this to, right? And that you knew that wasn't going to happen. He's been through 5 or 6 other FBI investigations before.
And like I say, he's been this federal judge for a number of years.
Yeah, 12 years.
And worked with tons of female, you know, law clerks, nothing.
Nothing.
So.
Yeah. So, and that's the thing that what I do think is interesting about this process, though, and what we got to hear a little bit last week was how this group of people, and we talk about elites in Washington, D.C. I mean, it's like that's their hometown. Their parents, you know, were doing things there before them, and they went to the right schools, went to do the things that they needed to do, and now they're working in D.C. in all of these different positions, and how interlinked their families are. I thought that was really interesting in hearing, and I guess I knew that to some degree, but it was even more evident to me in these hearings about all the people in that Senate room, their lives have intertwined throughout time.
Sure.
Especially the ones that have been there for so long, that at the end of the day, they all know that that this was a political thing for the rest of the country, and that it's. I wonder how they handle themselves outside of the spotlight like that, and how. I mean, we saw a glimpse from Lindsey Graham, about how I think truly upset he was about the process. I think there was some grandstanding there, but I think there was some real truth to how he felt about things and how they really try to be friendly with each other and how this sort of process certainly affects it. And we've seen, I mean, I went back and looked at, just for fun, to go back to 91 to watch the hearings relating to Clarence Thomas too, because it was the same sort of playbook back then. And, it was very interesting, the cast of characters that were there that are very similar to what we see now.
Yeah.
And so it's not surprising that history repeats itself and sometimes that these things happen.
So let's talk a little bit about the different, I want to talk about the different courts, different type of cases, all the different things. Basically, when it comes down to it, there's kind of the civil cases, criminal cases. I mean, is that really?
Yeah, those are the two main
things fall under one of those two.
Yeah, I mean, you've got some administrative law courts as well. You know, workers' compensation, Social Security, disability, those sorts of things. But really, the majority of the disputes that are dealt with in this country are either people being accused of crimes, and there's some sort of punitive aspect of that, and then there's the civil courts that are dealing with disputes, generally speaking, about money. Somebody's been hurt, or there's a breach of contract, or there's something going on between two individuals or a company and an individual where they can't decide themselves, and so they ask a judge or a jury to make a decision about the evidence and what's happened. And the interesting thing about those two types of systems is, you know, constitutionally, the litigants have different obligations and different rights, right? So criminal case, I mean, we see it with the Kavanaugh hearings, even though that wasn't a criminal proceeding, certainly felt like one.
No, absolutely.
But it's not. I mean, I think the Dems are right to some degree where they say it's a job interview, although I've never had a job interview where I had a million or two people watching it, but I think it's more than that. But it was sort of a quasi-civil proceeding because in the end, he can't be sent to jail, if you believe Dr. Ford. What he loses is his ability to be on the Supreme Court. So in those sorts of situations, in civil cases, you know, it's you have to prove something normally by preponderance of the evidence. And that's a big legal term. Basically, if you think of a scale, you think of the scales of justice, right? The gal, the blindfolded gal with the scales of justice, that the litigants are on each side of the scale. So you've got a plaintiff on one side who has the burden of proof, and you have the defendant on the other side who doesn't really have a burden of proof unless they have an affirmative defense or they have their own claims against the plaintiff, okay? So the plaintiff has to basically take those scales and put enough weight on their side of the scale so that that scale tilts to their side. That's all that a preponderance of the evidence means. And if you think about that, in reality, most things you can do that on. You don't have to prove you know, something beyond a reasonable doubt because that's a much higher standard. So just tilting the scale that more likely than not is another way of people saying it, that it happened, that something happened. And that's where we get into this discussion about can you prove something by a preponderance of the evidence with just one person's statement about what happened, an eyewitness testimony.
Right.
And the answer, of course, is if you're the decision maker is, well, it's whether or not I believe that person or not, whether I find them credible, or whether I think what they're saying is true. And that can happen. Mm-hmm. Especially in a civil case, you generally are trying the civil case to either six people from the community in a jury trial or to a judge. And if you are doing it to six people, you have to have them agree, not by a preponderance of the evidence, but unanimously that something is proven by a preponderance. So all six people have to agree that you've proven that.
Right.
And that becomes a little bit more difficult because think about any dinner party you go to, you've got to have all six people in that dinner party agree to something.
Yeah.
And that's not always easy.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So when you meet with clients and you go through things, and I mean, there's been horrible things that have happened. And again, you know, some people, oh, God, man, how could there be attorneys that, you know, represent people? Well, it's still about rights.
It is. I'll give you an example. Driving over here today, I get a call from a very distraught family member. Her brother was in a jail down in the southeast part of the state. He was suicidal. They picked him up on a violation of a restraining order. And while in jail, he killed himself. Her question is, if he is picked up by the police, do they have any duty to protect him from himself when he is in custody? It sounds like he hung himself. And so this is a real world question, right?
Sure.
Should individuals who now have custody of him have any obligation to make sure that they don't put anything in a cell that he could cause himself harm? Obviously, you can't do anything if he's going to hurt himself with his own body.
Sure.
But do you not put, you know, sheets? Do you not put anything in that jail cell that he'll be able to figure out a way to kill himself with it? Well, that is a question, and certainly you have a really bad result. And so the question is, how do you go through that process of resolving that? And let's say we get the autopsy report, and it turns out that, sure enough, they were given this information, and they weren't careful about what they left in his jail cell. And let's say they left an 8-foot piece of rope in his jail cell by mistake. Now, I don't know why it's there, but they did, and they didn't do a good search beforehand. Should the jail be responsible for something like that, even though the guy took his own life? That's a really hard question.
Yeah, yeah.
And but those are the sorts of things that our legal system is expected to answer mm-hmm. in a reasonable way, in a way that people can come and I mean, that's a great thing about our system in our country is that we have the ability to bring this sort of debate to a courtroom and have people in our community make those decisions. I can tell you that I've had a similar case already in my practice in another jurisdiction. And we were able to resolve the case before we actually had to have a jury decide. But those are the sorts of cases that sometimes come up.
Yeah.
And horrific result. I mean, terrible to talk about. But we still should have the opportunity to do it.
Sure.
And does someone, because a person is willing to take their own life, does that mean that their life didn't have any value? And that's another question.
Right. You mentioned under the civil deal, things with, you know, money, debt, contracts, different things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of legal issues about contracts.
Oh, yeah.
And what's written and what's not.
Huge.
Any tips just on contract? I mean, is there a common theme over the years that you say, you know what, this is why you should have somebody in the legal field look over something when you're doing a contract, because I find this is left out a lot.
Yeah. What I really see is people that have home services done on their houses or they have work done, significant work, you know, where you're having $5,000 or $10,000 or $20,000 or $100,000 worth of work done, and you use the contract that the contractor has, they present a contract to you, and you don't review it, you don't look on the backside of the contract, all of those sorts of things. And there are things that give all of the power to the contractor if there's a breach, if there's a dispute, or you do a handshake deal with someone, again, with a large amount of money and without any real terms being explained relating to what's going to be done, when it's going to be done, and how the person's going to get paid. Those are always situations where write it down, even if it's on a sheet of paper.
Sure.
And you have some semblance of what exactly is going to happen. And because the detail is where people get hung up on, because that's what generally the dispute is about. It's generally about, well, that's not, you didn't ask me to do that. You didn't ask me to do it in this time period. You know, all of those sorts of things where if you have no agreement, then it's very difficult to recreate. The good thing is we've got more people communicating by text and email. So those things sort of put together a story a lot of times, whereas, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, most of it was by phone call or handshake, and it was much more difficult.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing is just make sure that you have some sort of verification, written verification.
Gotcha. Yeah. It's Legal Hour with Kevin Flesch. Our number, 303-477-5600. If you got any legal question, we'll take your call. We'll be right back.
This is Steve Hurley with Affordable Interest Mortgage. I'm reaching out to you to help answer questions regarding the value of a reverse mortgage. You've heard both sides. I'm dedicated to helping seniors. The reason, like you, I am a senior and a veteran. Our wants and needs are different when compared to years past. Give me a call at 720-895-0500. Remember, take aim. Call me, Steve Hurley, at 720-895-0500. NMLS number 243200. Regulated by DORA, an equal opportunity lender.
Flesch and Beck are the attorneys you need after you've been injured due to the reckless actions of a drunk driver. Often victims of drunk driving accidents are forced to turn to their own insurance protection coverage to get their cars fixed and medical bills paid before receiving compensation, even though the drunk driver was at fault for the accident. When you are in an accident caused by someone who chose to drink and drive, unfortunately, getting the compensation you deserve isn't always as easy as you'd think. Insurance companies will bend over backwards to avoid
avoid a lawsuit, but only if they think they'll lose. And insurance companies know that if a lawsuit is leveled by a serious attorney and it goes to trial, the jury is allowed to decide on a monetary award for a sympathetic plaintiff who's been hit by a drunk driver. So a smaller injury settlement is in their best interest. Don't get taken advantage of. Don't settle for less than what you deserve. Call Flesh and Beck today at 303-806-8886 for the representation that will hold their feet to the fire and get you all the compensation that you deserve.
Hi, this is Scott Whatley. Now, many times you hear your radio host like me say something like, "Let me tell you about my friends at..." Then we'll talk about a sponsor that we truly believe in and endorse. Well, in this case, let me tell you about a company that really is part of my family, Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center. For over 13 years, we have trusted our furry family members to this wonderful staff. At Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center, they believe that all pets deserve to have a good life, and their goal is to help you keep your pets happy and healthy throughout their life by providing complete pet care services every day, all at one location. We love the Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center Boarding Lodge, and your pet will too. Your pet will receive one-on-one care and attention throughout their stay. Open 7 days a week for your convenience. Check them out. Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center, located at 8681 Lincoln Avenue in Lone Tree. 303-708-8050. 303-708-8050. Or check them out online at lonetreevet.com.
Ladies, I know you're tired of walking into the local gun store and seeing the same old thing. So let me tell you about Rampart Firearms. Just a quarter mile up Highway 67 off of Santa Fe and Sedalia, you will find a great selection of guns, ammo, tactical, and personal defense weapons. And if you or your spouse love to hunt, Rampart Firearms is a great stop for all of your hunting needs. Shotguns, rifles, pistols, anything from predator hunting to your next big game trip. Head to Rampart Firearms at the foot of the Rockies. Open 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. And you will only pay a 4% tax on your purchase. RampartFirearms.com, 720-468-0050. That's 720-468-0050.
Denver's Afternoon Rush. Rush to Reason is coming up at 3. Now, back to Haystack Help Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to Haystack Help Radio. My name is Scott Whatley, along with Kevin Flesh. Once again, check out Kevin's website, fleshlawfirm.com. It's Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886. We get some questions just from time to time. We always hear all these different things about, you know, warrants, all these different things. So, man, our time is just flying by.
I know.
We've got so much I want to talk about. But when people talk about, you know, you hear them, oh, they're getting a warrant.
Yep.
I mean, what's that whole process like, and what does someone have to prove to get a warrant for someone, and what are different reasons?
Right, absolutely. So, generally speaking, the only people that can get warrants are the district attorney or some sort of law enforcement that goes to a judge, and they have to provide evidence through, normally it's through an affidavit or some other evidence that's credible evidence. The federal, we've heard about the FISA warrants and all of those sorts
sure.
of things. But it's basically somebody affirming under oath that what they have found through their investigation leads them to believe that they have probable cause that they need a particular person to be charged or they need a particular thing. So you've got search warrants where somebody says, I need to go look at something or investigate something, and I need to go into this building or this car or look into somebody's backpack that we've taken into custody, you know, all sorts of things. Computers, cell phones, all of those things have a privacy interest. So relating to search warrants, before law enforcement can do anything in the way of a search, unless you've given them permission, and that's why we tell you never to give law enforcement permission to do any sort of search.
Sure.
But before they're able to do that, they have to have some sort of evidence that leads a judge, a third party that is not involved in the investigation, obviously has a judicial acumen, that will sign off on it, giving them the power through the state to go and do those things. So that's a search warrant. So that's to look at stuff. But they still need to have probable cause that it seems reasonable and necessary for some sort of criminal enterprise, right? Mm-hmm. So that makes pretty sense. The warrant aspect of it is similar in the sense that the only way you get a warrant against a person, in other words, the way that you start a criminal process whereby you can take the person into custody and set a bond and make them come in and come forward and be charged with a crime, is through a warrant as well. And that's the same thing. The court looks at some sort of affidavit that's given to them or some other evidence, credible evidence through law enforcement or through district attorney that says this person has done something that has committed a crime and that that person won't commit on their own and we have to go get them. So give us the ability to go get them and set a reasonable bond, unless, of course, it's a murder case or something else where sure. there's no bond hold. Domestic violence cases, for example, even misdemeanor domestic violence cases have a no bond hold in Colorado. So you and your wife get into I had a case 2 days ago that came in. He and his girlfriend got into some sort of argument. Why the girlfriend called the police. Police came out and talked with her. Decided he wasn't there, but decided that he needed to be taken into custody. They completed a warrant application, took it to a judge, got the judge to sign it. They went out and got him 2 months later, and he was taken into custody, no bond, and then had to wait overnight and then set a bond the next morning. So that's how warrants work. Wow. They can either have bond amounts set with regard to the warrant, or it can be a no bond hold where they bring you in, you have to sit in custody for a period of time before you get in front of a judge. And normally, if it's a no bond hold, it can be that they're bondable. You have the ability to have bond set. And the whole idea of bond is that the judge sets an amount that will guarantee or likely guarantee that you show up for court appearances and also balances your right to being out and having freedom while the case is pending versus the public's concern about safety. So, sure. you know, those situations where someone seems to be out of control or have mental health issues or poses a real danger, or they're just more than likely not going to show up for a court appearance, those bonds are higher than where if you have no criminal history, you're saying, I want to defend myself, you know, I want to make sure I'll show up for all the court appearances, then you could get what's called a PR bond or a personal recognizance bond where you sign that if you don't show up, you'll pay a certain amount, but you don't have to put up any money.
Gotcha. Yeah. Now, and Wells, you're the bondsman.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So talk about their role. How do they get... I mean, you get put in jail, you've never been there before, and all of a sudden you got to get a bond. I mean, is that something you kind of would help?
Yeah, so we work with several different bonding agencies in the city. Quite frankly, though, bonding agents are becoming more and more irrelevant to the process because, well, this is what's happened is there's been some argument to suggest that the bonding agents have not been as practical or as necessary in current day courts, and that, quite frankly, the state wants to take over some of the management and responsibility of watching these individuals while they're out on bond. There's a really good argument to suggest that what we now have in the sense of pretrial services is really probation before you're convicted of a crime. As a criminal defense lawyer, that's how I feel a lot of times. The argument from the state is that they're giving individuals who, let's say, previously, they would have set a bond at $5,000 cash or surety. So a $5,000 bond may cost you anywhere from $500 to $1,000 to get a bondsman to put the $5,000 up okay. to make sure that you show up for court. If you don't, then the bondsman goes out and tries to find you. Otherwise, they have to pay the $5,000. That's the whole idea of the system originally. Now what the courts are doing is saying, listen, I'll give you... Instead of what I would have given you as a $5,000 cash or surety bond, I'll give you a $5,000 PR bond with the condition that you're on pretrial. And what pretrial means is that during this process that you're out of custody, you have to go do random urinalysis. You have to check in with a pretrial officer on a regular basis. If, for example, it's a violation of a restraining order, we're going to put a GPS unit on your ankle so that we know exactly where you're at. Now, you haven't been accused, or you've been accused, but you haven't been convicted of anything yet, but you've already started some processes that the court believes would be rehabilitative. They're watching your alcohol content and all of those sorts of things, and yet you haven't actually been convicted of anything. Many of my clients that are in that situation say, well, this doesn't seem very fair, and I would agree, but the problem is the alternative is, well, you sit in custody.
Yeah.
Because there's no other way that the court's going to let you out without doing those things. So I think it is a little. I think the pendulum has swung a little bit too far relating to that, only because I think we have more people on pretrial now that are really, it's early probation for them when I may be able to get their case dismissed. So then they've spent all of this time and effort and money being out while the case, they haven't been determined to be guilty of anything yet.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Once again, you're listening to the Legal Hour with Kevin Flesch. Kevin's firm can handle a lot of different things, and we mainly talk about criminal things here, personal injury. We'll come back, Kevin, let's set that a minute and kind of talk about all the things that your office handles, and we're going to talk about some of the different type of courts that are out there, and then what are some of the cases that go to those different courts. We'll be right back.
Fight rising auto insurance premiums by calling Group Insurance Analysts. Paul Lenigro, owner of GIA, has seen a significant spike in auto insurance premiums over the past few years due to the large number of expensive hailstorms in Colorado. You remember last summer when that record-breaking hailstorm caused $1.4 billion in damages? Not just to homes and roofs, but plenty of vehicles took the hit too. And insurance companies are passing the cost right along to you. Now more than ever, you need an insurance advocate who will shop the entire market, hunting for the right coverage at the best price. Paul and his team of analysts will compare the plans of many different insurance companies at no cost to you. Call Group Insurance Analysts today and reevaluate your auto insurance before premiums continue to rise. 303-423-0162.
Hi, this is Kevin Trisna, owner of M4 Roofing and Gutters. Since 2004, it's been our mission to provide the highest quality of service and trust to every customer we serve. M4 Roofing and Gutters is a family-owned and operated company right here in Englewood, Colorado. At M4 Roofing and Gutters, quality customer service is our top priority. For a free inspection and estimate for your roofing project, call today 303-797-8600. That's 303-797-8600, or visit us online at m4roofing.com. M4 Roofing and Gutters is an A-plus member of the Better Business Bureau and haystackhelp.com.
Hi, this is Scott Watley. Let me tell you what I love about Stack Optical. They are truly one of the last optician-owned, family-owned optical stores. At Stack Optical, you can be confident you'll receive personal attention. For over 50 years, Alan Stack has shown he really cares about making his customers happy. Stack Optical also has a beautiful new location at 2233 South Monaco Parkway in Denver. Free and easy up-close parking. Stack Optical has an on-site eyeglass production lab. Whether you need office eyewear or a new set of shooting or golf glasses, Stack Optical has the solution with the Stack Sport Pack. Give them a call today and ask for their $69 eye exam, 303-321-1578. That's 303-321-1578. Your eyes and vision are one of the most important things in life. I'm confident at Stack Optical, you'll see the difference. That's 303-321-1578, stackoptical.com.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio. We are finishing up the Legal Hour here with our good friend Kevin Flesch. Once again, Kevin's number, and I always tell you, put this in your phone, 303-806-8886. And again, it's fleschlawfirm.com. So, we got a call during the break, and good question. About going flipping back to Kavanaugh in our first couple of segments here, Kevin. Yeah. Let's say nothing comes out of this and, whether he really gets the election on the Supreme Court, whatever.
Right.
But he gets proven innocent of these charges, whatever. Can he go back and do kind of a defamation of character suit against some of these, this Dr. Ford, some of these other people that are put these false allegations on him?
Yeah, so defamation, defaming of a person legally means that you make a statement about a person's character or about them that at the time that you make it, you know isn't true. And it affects that person in some way in their life. And so, absolutely. I mean, in the event that Judge Kavanaugh would want to go after someone, certainly Dr. Ford would be one of those individuals, and those other accusers that are out there. Relating to the lawyers that are bringing the claim, there's been no lawsuits filed, so there isn't a, you know, in the law, there's a standard relating to that it has to be well-grounded in fact or law. Or you're trying to create new law, and you're making an argument that has not been tested before. That's sort of, you know, we always hear about things being frivolous, right? Mm-hmm. That why is this lawyer bringing this frivolous claim or not? And the balance relating to that balancing of what is frivolous and not generally doesn't come upon the lawyer unless you can prove the lawyer knew that none of what his client or her client was saying was true when it was said. Then the lawyer has an obligation to do something. Yes, so liable is, liable specifically is the act of making a statement in a written format. So you can defame somebody and it be liable if you print it and you know at the time that you've printed it that it's not true. You could write a letter to me about Charlie and you could say things that weren't true about him that would affect his position here at the radio station. And if those things turn out not to be true and he can prove that you knew they weren't true at the time that you made them and he's lost his job over it, he has the ability to go after you, Scott, for those statements. So that's libel. Slander is generally is not written. It's just verbal statements that are made about someone. Now, it gets a little murkier because in this environment that we have here, we have a public figure, Judge Kavanaugh, that to some degree things can be said about him that he might not have as many claims as you and I would because he's a public figure.
Yeah.
Right. But this sort of thing, I think, is being tested, especially with individuals. We see it in Hollywood all the time, right, where the National Enquirer makes some statements in their paper about a particular individual. We had Hulk Hogan, I think, sued somebody about, right?
Yeah.
And that was
right.
The salacious details of the sexual escapades that he had. And he ended up basically putting that periodical out of business. So it's certainly something that can be done. The question is, would Judge Kavanaugh do any of this in the event that he is, and he's not really found innocent, right? It's just the political process that the senators that make a difference in getting, they need 51 votes, right? And if he gets the 51 votes and he's on the Supreme Court, do you think that he will do anything against these individuals? Yeah. Probably not.
Right.
But he has the legal basis to do that. It's a great question.
Sure.
But I've seen it happen. In our practice, we've had a number of cases where an individual loses their job or loses a contract or something else, and they can prove that the reason that that happened wasn't because something that they did with the employer, but the employer had gotten information from someone else that wasn't true. That employer relied on that information and terminated their employment. Well, you don't have a wrongful employment claim because the employer was acting what they thought reasonably with the information they'd gotten. But it turns out later that information is not true, and the person that gave it to them knew it wasn't true. You have an action against that person that brought that information to the employer, and that's a defamation or a libel or slander action.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and it's like any other tort. You got to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that they did it and that they knew that it was a lie at the time that they gave it.
Right. We don't have time to get in the court thing, but a few minutes. Let's wrap it up on just Flesh and Beck Law recently. Several months back now. Kind of a name change there, but again, it isn't something new. It's with your...
Lori has been with me. Exactly. We've been practicing together for 12 years. She actually, at this point, with her name on the door and all of the other things we do, gets the recognition that she rightfully deserves of the fact that she's very involved in the practice. And she's a great lawyer. And so it's been a really good thing, and it's been nice to have her doing some of the marketing and things that I was doing when it was just Flesh Law. And so that's been a real benefit to the firm. But we're a litigation firm, so we handle all sorts of litigation in both state and federal courts in Colorado, municipal courts. We do a bunch of criminal defense work in municipal courts as well. We've got a bunch of contracts with them, and we do private work there as well. But both criminal defense work and also civil litigation. We talk a lot about the personal injury side of the practice, because that's what people have interest in. But the criminal stuff is also very interesting. The criminal cases are always, we're talking about people's liberty and trying to do the best that we can and proving what exactly happened in a case and whether or not it's a crime or not, and also, you know, protecting people's rights relating to their constitutional obligations to prove them beyond a reasonable doubt before you put somebody in jail.
Yep. And, you know, it is a reminder, and we'll talk about this as we get closer to the office parties and all the things that'll be coming up for holidays. In this climate, not talking about the weather,
right.
I'm telling you, companies need to be aware of what they endorse.
You're right.
You know,
what sort of environment they create.
Environment they put out there, because I'm telling you, it can be not a happy holiday.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And especially when you get, well, there's just a lot of things going on. We've got a lot. There's a lot of debate about just the human experience between men and women right now. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good debate, but it's also, it certainly puts that strain on relationships in offices. I mean, I see people in my office more than I do my kids and my wife at home.
Sure.
A lot of times. And so if you're not in a functional place, certainly with the holidays coming up and holiday parties, and a lot of times there's alcohol involved and other things are said and done that you regret later. And so that's absolutely something that not only businesses, but everybody should be considering when going out and doing those things. There's supposed to be a happy time and a time of celebration at the end of the year, not causing more problems for the following year.
Absolutely. Well, Kevin, always good information, man. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Again, Kevin Flesh, 303-806-8886, fleshlawfirm.com. Thanks for joining us today. Be sure and check out our website, haystackhelp.com. And our helpline is always there for you, 303-333-HELP, 303-333-4357. Hope you have a great rest of your day. And failed to mention this, go Rockies. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.